Welcome to the High Rise Podcast, presented by Headset, the leading data and analytics company for the cannabis industry.
So, Emily, another week and New York continues to make headlines in the cannabis space.
It's making more headlines than it is weed sales, that's for sure.
At least legal weed sales.
Good point. And by the way, I don't count the products sold in those crappy stores to be weed. I think it's just random.
Right. Who knows what it is?
It's oregano.
That's what you tell your parents anyways. So the headline this week is that a coalition of New York's medical cannabis companies, including Acreage Holdings, PharmaCann, Green Thumb Industries, or GTI, Curaleaf as well, have filed a lawsuit against the state regulators. The lawsuit, unsurprisingly, is intended to aims to compel regulators to open up licensing for all retail dispensary applicants immediately, right? So unsurprising, because I think a lot of these organizations made these investments early on because it's New York, right? And they took they took a plunge in the space for medical, which has always been kind of a slower program. I think wasn't New York, they didn't have flower forever.
It was horrible.
Yeah, and just so limited.
Yeah,
in so many ways. And I think a lot of the operators there, obviously, you know, maybe had higher hopes and then certainly wanted to participate, I would imagine, in the adult use market right out of the gate. But that was not possible. So when the regs came out, as we all know, that the Office of Cannabis Management and Cannabis Control, they created this new license class, the Conditional Adult Use Retail Dispensary Program. So the CAURD, right, that we see everywhere, that we're always talking about with the stores opening up. Those are all the CAURD, the Conditional Adult Use Dispensaries, that are, you know, designed to go to a certain audience, like, you know, people that have been impacted by prohibition, right? And they wanted to give, the way I understand it, the Cannabis Control Office of Cannabis Management, New York, basically wanted to give them some room, make sure that no one comes in and like owns the whole thing. And so with that program, the CAURD, the state will award a maximum of 150 licenses. So caps at 150 and under that. I think they all have to be licensed first, or there's some time frame. I don't know for sure on the regs there. But the license caps are also tied to the population. So in Manhattan, they can have 22. Long Island, they can have 20, Brooklyn, 19, and so on, right? As it stands today, there are five. There are five. And every week I kind of can't remember. Is it three? Is it four? Is it five? And it's five that are open. Three in New York City and two outside. I think the latest is Ithaca, which is a college town, right?
So Ithaca is gorgeous. That's the joke. Get it? Because they're gorgeous.
That's got to be the name of the episode.
I couldn't. I grew up so in Buffalo. I saw t-shirts with Ithaca is gorgeous everywhere.
So yeah, you know, that's where we're at with those CAURD licenses. So they got a long way to go to get to 150. Yeah.
Five stores in the entire, and by the way, growing up in Buffalo, New York, this really chafes me because it's like people think that New York State is the island of Manhattan with like the Niagara Falls going off the bottom tip and that's it, that there's no other part of the state. And there's so much more to the state. And I mean, Corning is from there. Glass. I mean, important. Mm-hmm. How about Kodak? Kodak was from there. There's things that go on there. The Buffalo Bills. But I think, you know, five retail locations in the entire state is just bonkers.
Bonkers. And especially because the first one opened in December, right? They got it in 2022 before the new, right? And here we are with just five. Meanwhile, there's what, 1,500, 1,600 illicit shops that New York government like recognizes, or the police department or whoever, right? So you got a long way to go. Even
and
with 100.
And by the way, they're in Buffalo too. I check in with, I do market research through my you know, New York State network, and it's not just New York where those illicit or the gray market kind of vape shops that sell questionable weed are located. It's across the state.
That's a good point. So probably way more than 1,500.
Tons more.
Yikes. So yes. Medical, there's 39 dispensaries. The state has 20 million people about, right? And about 120,000 registered patients. Yeah, so that's what they're working with. So it's no surprise, you know, that they're doing this lawsuit. I mean, the state, you know, is trying to crack down on all the illicit stuff. You know, in February, there was a lot of news around the DA of Manhattan, the district attorney there, you know, talking about a crackdown, this big coordinated effort. They sent letters to 400 stores or, you know, smoke shops in Manhattan. That's still a far cry from, you know, the numbers that probably are out there. And again, it, you're right. It's like beyond Manhattan, but at least, you know, they're going after it. But still, you know, you're in this world where there's only, you know, five legal stores, you know, there's 40 medical stores, dispensaries, and not that many medical patients. So of course, you know, if I was on the other side of this, I think I would probably be doing the same thing, trying to change it. I, you know, I'm sure there's, you know, financial motivations, a lot of investments have been made, but certainly like just for access, right? Like why not have, you know, more stores that have licensed and tested products, that are out there. And so I want to kind of talk about it, right? I want to talk about a scenario, like, do we think it would happen? Do you think they would win? And if they were to win, what kind of impact might that have on the state realistically?
So just to start, I mean, almost no state has opened in this. In fact, I might be so bold as to say no state has opened without a lawsuit. Someone's always unhappy, and usually it has to do with who won the licenses and who gets to get open first. But in this particular situation, it is pretty, it's unfortunate because these groups did invest. And I remember too, when I was at Ascend, actually we were still private and we were looking at a Florida deal, which we did not do and someone else did, and instead pivoted the capital to New York because New York was setting up to be such an interesting market. I think we all think it's an interesting market energetically because of what goes on in New York. And, you know, I think when they shifted this very much at the very final days of rolling out what was going to be the regs before the comment period, this was a harsh turn and a change because in other markets, you have been able to, if you've had a medical store, ostensibly, you've been serving the community, you've invested into the community, and you're going to be able to get open. Now, I think we talked about this on earlier podcasts too, which is that in our industry, because the regulators continue to whiff the ball, the strongest and fiercest and frankly, the most sophisticated competitor is the illicit market. And in this instance, it's absolutely the truth. So I will say it again. I feel like we're setting up the equity applicants who are getting the doors to not have the success that they deserve because they're competing in this very bizarre and gray market environment. And I think if you let the better capitalized operators, and let's face it, like you and I were talking about in the pre-show, it's a vertical license with three potential adult use retail doors, right? That was the deal. And everybody was basically on board for that. And of those five, let's say it's three each across the state, that's 15 additional doors. That is not a lot of stores for a $20 million or 20 million population state. And so letting those operators who've had to compete with the illicit market and other markets get open and do the hard work to do that. And then it creates a more, a clearer regulatory environment for equity operators to come in and open one store here, one store here, one store here. And that's how you get your 150. So then you're even at still 165 stores. Let's say that's it. For the state, there's plenty of citizens of the state of New York to go around across 165 doors, right? Or am I?
Absolutely.
Check me if I'm wrong.
No, absolutely. I think that's the, you know, the same point that I wanted to make is that it's it is like a drop in the bucket, really. Yeah. Like especially with the regulations limiting, you know, this idea that they were going to run away with the market if they let the incumbents come in and open their stores. I don't know, doesn't seem to hold true. If that was in fact, you know, the reason, I mean, there has to be some reason why they limited it or you know, limited those operators to not participate and to instead go with this conditional adult use retail license. So yeah, I think it won't make much of a difference. And if anything, it seems like it would be a positive difference because of what you're saying about the illicit market, giving people more access and getting people on the right channel, especially at the slow pace of these rollouts, you know, unless there's like some huge wave coming. I mean, to get to 150 stores at this rate, five and in 3 months, it seems like it's going to take a long, long time. Yeah, exactly.
So when I feel tired about, even thinking about it.
When I think about the opportunity for the incumbents here, it's less about, I don't think that they're going to run away with the whole market where they're like, this is, we're going to sue because we want to own New York. And I think when you look at the regs and you look at markets like Washington that have similar caps on retail stores, you see the same kind of reality is that no one runs away with it. There are groups of four stores that do very well in the market, but they're four, you know, and the state of Washington is a much smaller population than the state of New York, but they, you know, they can't capture the whole thing with four stores. So I think the same problem is going to happen with these operators in New York, but I do think it'll be a material difference for them in their day to day with 120,000 patients out there now, you know, spread out across these different locations, the program, the medical program that was so slow to get things like flour in, and all the other, you know, kind of restrictions that, that were, you know, associated with it. I think that, yeah, it's not going to be this big change for them. For them to own the whole state. But what will be different is like their day-to-day business, right? Like when we look at a market like Missouri, which opened in February, when you look at that first week's sales, it was greater than a 3x increase for like an average store's revenue versus, you know, once they became adult use. And that actually... that's pretty low average. I mean, average, when you look at things like weekend sales, it actually was a much higher multiple, right? Cause you get a lot of people kind of out and about shopping on the weekends, stopping in. So that's what I think these shops are looking at, you know, if they were to get approved is at least, you know, a 3X increase in sales, probably more. But you know, it just obviously depends on, you know, where they're at, you know, what's there already. You know, I know a few are in New York City and many are not. So it's just kind of like, where do they all exist? But I do think that if you look at what happens when a state goes from medical to adult use, a market like New York, you know, these operators, should they win this suit, you know, which is a big if, then I think that that's the outcome that they're going to get, right? It's just better sales for their stores, but I don't think that they're going to, take over the market. Based on the way the regs are written and the way I understand them, where you're still just limited. Like they couldn't go buy all the conditional adult use stores up, you know, and own everything. So yeah, I don't see a lot of downside, but you know, lawsuits like you're right. I mean, I don't really think about that because these markets come online and you kind of move on, but you're right. Everyone has had some sort of lawsuit and many of them don't go anywhere. So if this were to not go anywhere, I think we're just going to see maybe, you know, continued push for this, you know, over the time frame. And I'm not sure how long they have until they're allowed in, but I remember it being a pretty long like waiting period that they had to stand by for.
Yeah. I mean, I anticipate there will be even more lawsuits actually because of some of the other aspects of this, like the fund that's supposed to exist that doesn't really exist and all the other things that have gone on, you know, the well-laid plans of mice and men. And I think, you know, just, okay, so several years ago now, Morgan and I did, and our team, we did an analysis of Canada, right? We knew how much infrastructure had been built to grow cannabis in Canada. And we basically looked at the population density, distribution, all of those things. And we were like, okay, there's enough capacity to grow enough weed that every man, woman, and child in the country of Canada would have to smoke like a pound of weed a day. You know what I mean? We just, and that's when we were like, we're out of here. And we started rotating capital to the United States. And to your exact point about who could own the New York market, I think one of the things that drives me insane is if you kind of did a similar analysis, if you're like, okay, max, we get 165 stores open across the entire state of New York, depending on the jurisdiction regulations and getting these things open, like how many people, 21 and plus, I mean, you can't even physically get that population through the doors of these retailers for anyone to own the market, let alone, you know, when there's tourism. I mean, forget not just New York, Niagara Falls. People go to Niagara Falls. People go up to like Woodstock and the, you know, what's that called? The like Saugerties, those places, the Catskills. Like there's traveling that, and also Lake Placid, like there's people who travel to New York, not just the citizens of New York, the residents of New York. So I think honestly, the fear of this is like a scarcity mindset versus a well-informed consideration of what a market can bear and how you can physically move humans through a door to process transactions. And we've seen this in other states. Like you saw it in Illinois when it opened, you see it in New Jersey. Like that's an actual logistical question mark for these operators when these markets turn on. Because to your point, in New York, I don't think it'll be a 0-1 story. I think it will be a 3-4x, like you said. Like that's what I'm seeing in Missouri when I'm talking to retailers, is their medical stores go from 3-4x higher depending on where they're located, especially if they're located in more of like a Kansas City area. So the, right. That's a realistic expectation. So, and you know, these groups built real infrastructure to support this back end. I would point out a couple of other things that we could learn from other markets. Massachusetts has a 3-store cap and a full vertical backdrop. So what we've seen is that massive issue of the wholesale pricing falling off a cliff. But what I'm also seeing is that at some point, an operator wants to understand, do I run my business as a family business for life? Like if I have 1 or 2 retail doors, do I just run this as a very nice family business? Maybe. Right. But do I also want to potentially realize a return on having run this store, stood it up? And what we're seeing in Massachusetts is there's no one to buy retail. Because all of the big operators who have the resources to buy anything are at their 3-store cap. So unless you're shuffling licenses, there's no exit. And unless we get private equity into this industry or any other additional equity into this industry, there's no exit. And that's not what every operator wants to do. So I think these regulations actually impair every end of the business spectrum, from the quote unquote enterprise, which is a hilarious concept in cannabis because the companies are still so young and small, down to the single door operators. And you create this issue. And I just think there's so much information that could be borrowed from to play this through. But I mean, frankly, I think these operators would have been thrilled to open with a 3-store cap, knowing what they know about Massachusetts, calibrating from that, and then knowing that someday potentially this could expand. But I don't see a way that anyone could quote unquote own this market. I think you could have a killer location in this market, but I don't think you're going to own the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And I think they're going to need to call you as an expert witness in this case.
I will testify. Okay.
Thanks for listening to the High Rise Podcast presented by Headset. For more information on Headset, visit headset.io.